Start the broadcast, and we are live on air. Can I hear you, Marianne?
Hello!
Yes, we can. This is the DS106 Good Spell. We've been futzing splendidly since 2013 on the DS106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets from the blog post number 106, published by the DS106 Sync at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS106. Our hashtag is #106Bell. This can be gospel radio for the DS106 generation. Mantras and Cones explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is the author of all these bullet points, Marianna Finnis. Good evening, Marianna.
Good evening, John. How are you this evening?
Not bad.
Shall we do our British thing? How is the weather up there?
Oh, no. It's been raining steadily, I think, on and off all day. The snow has cleared. We had a reasonable amount of snow on Friday here, so it's gone. I didn't lie very much, just patchy, but looking out the window occasionally was quite blizzard-like. What's it down like down in the south of the country?
I won't tell you. It won't make you feel better.
No.
Goodness.
It's not been the driest weekend, I don't think. But it is now May, so...
There you go.
I didn't get up at dawn this morning to wash my face in the dew. I'm just hoping that I look okay anyway on the radio. We're on bullet point 84.
Yep.
Phone art connections have added to the experience hugely. I like lectures and homework.
Yes, I did say that.
Yeah.
You see now that there's a controversial statement. We can talk about Fauna, but probably our million listeners would want us to talk about the controversial statement of liking lectures and homework at a time when one is not supposed to like lectures and homework.
There's quite a lot of people in school now who think that homework is not that good a thing.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of agree to some extent that for primary school children that homework isn't a great idea, but we can come to that later. So maybe you could tell me what Fonar is.
Fonar, do we have a? Did it stand for anything? Anyway, I can tell you from memory what it was. I guess because I'm not even sure if it is running still or not, because it was an open photography class that ran from, I want to say, Coventry University, when Jonathan Worth was there. And it is, I guess I'd say, kind of like DS106, but I'd say different in as much as what I always thought Fauna was doing was blogs were used, Twitter was used, Storyfy was used, SoundCloud, and all of these other things that we would use in the S106, but it was done, the central thing, I would say, was the class experience for them. And anybody could join in, and indeed, you know, people did, from the kind of open, this sort of open network. But I would say that the central experience was the class experience. So you had, you know, people would be, this is the lectures and the homework. So Jonathan would get, you know, famous photographers, people who looked at the kind of, you know, the sort of more the philosophy of, you know, photography, you know, various people who I didn't know, but who were really interesting to listen to. And they would, you know, some would just do formal lectures and talk about, you know, specific aspects of photography. That was the original Fauna, and okay. It's run a few times. And as I say, I don't know if it's
it's running. Fauna.org.
The stuff is still there.
And well, the last post was the 17th of February 2016 this year. So there seems to be something going on there.
Well, there you go.
I'm not sure exactly what, but that's Fauna. jonathanbenmoore.org. And, well,
I was just going to say, Jonathan then moved. He's somewhere else now. Then he did something called Phonar Nation, which was photography classes totally open globally for younger people. And now I think he's using the whole notion of connected classes. He's doing research for his PhD, and he's got a whole group of people kind of trialing, you know, some of the methodologies that he used for Phonar, because he is doing research for his PhD. Brilliant. So that's everybody up to date.
Yeah. And what you said was Phonar connections have added to the experience. So while you were doing DS106, you dipped in and out of Phonar, did you? Or?
Well, I found out about it. I got interested in the ideas and in some of what they were doing. And it was running in parallel, I think, or it started somewhere halfway through us doing the Headless 13. And you know, how I tend to be one of these people that, you know, I'm very disciplined in many ways. And so I kept looking, you know, when you look over at something that you think, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I kind of like to do some of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And they go, no, but I'm not doing that because I'm doing DS106. And then at some point, one day, I just went, what the hell? I'm going to do a Phonar task as a daily create. And that's how I started. I just went off. I found various... you know, some of the activities and some of the lectures that they were, you know, they were doing. They had things like, you know, they'd make Phonar food and photograph it for the lecture. So it was all quite a fun thing. And there's lots of young ones, you know, as it is with the University of Mary Washington, when you have all the young ones mm-hmm. getting together and doing fun things. And I started to do some of the tasks as they create. And I started to steal from Phonar as I framed it at the time.
Yeah, and it's sort of, I guess you can't steal, or, you know, it's on the open web. And you point to a post, which is this. I don't know if you'll talk about this one, which is Phonar Task 3. As this seems quite strange for a photography course that asked you to tell a story without any photographs, without any music, without any just your voice.
Yeah. Well, I would say that that this is one of the things that I found interesting about Phonar in particular, that it wasn't just sort of photography in the sense of teaching you how to take photographs. It was more sort of photography in context. Photography in the context, in the current, I guess, social context, where photographers cannot really make money unless they do something more than. And Jonathan is very big on this whole thing about how you have to use multimedia, how you have to do lots and lots of different things using the network and, you know, and working with what the open web can do in order for you to get your message out there. And really, that is what he was teaching them. And so there were a lot of really strange tasks like this, because I think it was it really was, I think, bottom line, he saw it as any image that you did was a storytelling activity. And unless you worked with the whole context of, you know, what does it mean to, you know, to tell a story, what does it mean to take a photo in a context. And in this particular task was actually, I thought, really interesting, because what it was asking is, all of these people who are learning how to be professional photographers will have subjects, as it were, that they take. You know, they travel around the world and often difficult situations to take photos. Mm-hmm. Take photos generally of very vulnerable people. And the whole point of what he was trying to make with this was, unless you understand your own vulnerability and you put yourselves in that sort of space, you ain't ever going to be a good photographer. You're just going to be observing. And I actually always thought that was very interesting. So yeah. the whole task was to put yourself in a place. So what I wrote in the post was, you know, I understood the task to be about a willingness to tell about something at that age where we are not sure that we actually want to tell the story. At that age where we feel vulnerable sharing with strangers. Which is what you would be doing, say, if you were in a war, you know, in a war in some strange country and you were taking photographs of, you know, children hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I, so I don't know. To me, it made sense that you would want people to somehow be willing to experience with that edge in some way. That's the, that's that one.
Do you want me to see if I can cue it up?
Go on, you cue it up.
Yeah, okay. I think this is worth listening to. And it's only a couple of minutes, it's less than a couple of minutes long. So here we go.
Phoner task 3. That we need to step into the gravity of being a storyteller. This idea keeps resonating in my head as I set out to tell a personal story with no sound effects or music, just my voice. The aim of this task, as I understand it, is to put ourselves in the shoes of those who may feel vulnerable when we choose to tell their story through a photo, a film, or on radio. The power dynamics change from the story owner to the storyteller, and this is hard. Padre nuestro que estás en los cielos, santificado sea tu nombre, venga a nosotros tu reino, hágase tu voluntad, así en la tierra como en el cielo. El pan nuestro de cada día, dánosle hoy, y perdónanos nuestras deudas, así como nosotros perdonamos a nuestros deudores, y no nos dejes caer en la tentación, mas líbranos del mal. Amén. And that is my personal story. The Lord's Prayer in Spanish, old-fashioned Spanish at that. Something that tells of a childhood as a Catholic that still soothes when worried or restless. I am now an 8-precept Buddhist with all that that entails, and yet I still use the ritual of the Catholic Rosary to calm the mind when quiet meditation is a struggle. Not dissimilar to a mantra, but imbued with all the history of a childhood spent kneeling by my bed each night, asking God to keep everyone I love safe and well.
Oops.
You gave me the good ending. You gave it a musical ending. I like that.
That was lovely.
What the thing to add, I guess, to it was that it was as much of a surprise to me as it was to you and anybody else listening, because I had completely forgotten that I had done all of this, and it made me cry. I listened to it as if it was the first time for me, and it actually made me cry, which I thought was really, really sweet. And I was very surprised that I was willing to put that out there. So there you go.
I don't see why not, because it's a nice piece of work, and just right from the very start, the first, I'll just hang on. Oops, wrong thing.
Phoner task 3.
Not that bit, obviously. This bit.
That we need to step into the gravity of being a storyteller. Yeah.
You know, that just takes you... It places you in the story very nicely. In the right frame for what you're going to go on to talk about.
That was one of the lectures from one of the guest speakers, and I do, now that we start to talk about it, I do remember, and I suppose all that I said when we were introducing the idea, I'd never thought, I don't know if you have, but I had never thought until I heard all of this, the idea that actually, the whole power dynamic that is at play when you are, wandering in some, in some godforsaken place taking photos, and what you do, how you handle it, what you understand the context to be, how you treat the people that you photograph will so hugely affect what you end up with. And that really it is that there is, it's a kind of, there's a beauty of care, the gravity word I thought was really quite, I suppose it really does stop you in your tracks and makes you kind of go, this isn't just... Mm-hmm. Fun and games with animated GIFs, I guess. I suppose it did that for me.
Yeah. I guess as well, it's that if you are, you've got the camera or you've got the mic, it does give. I mean, I've never thought of it in this way that other people are vulnerable, but I've certainly noticed that if you broadcast things, that people that are sort of would normally be out of reach for you to talk to, you can talk to. You can approach people and say, you know, will you talk to me about this? And you wouldn't normally do that. You know, and you know, if you went up to somebody who's well known in their field for something and said, oh, I'd really like you to give me half an hour chat about your research or your this topic, they might look at you a bit strange. But if you say, I'm doing this podcast and I'd like to talk to you, you know, they might actually even be nervous about it, it's not quite the same thing because these people are not in vulnerable situations, but it sort of speaks to that power dynamic, I think, that if it's your story or your microphone, your camera, or whatever, that's certainly moving things about a wee bit.
And of course, you do have, you know, the stories of when, you know, this kind of thing is handled poorly, when photographers go into situations and they are delicate situations, and you know they don't handle them well. You do have a lot of those, but I think this whole thing of actually having a course where you're saying to people, you can't be asking other people to be, you know, to step into vulnerable situations where they're telling you personal stories just by the way they might pose in the case of a photographer, or by the words they might choose to share with you in the case of, you know, an interview on radio. You can't be doing that unless you are willing to step in that same space. You need to learn what that's like so that you can be respectful of others. I actually thought that was really quite thoughtful.
Yeah. If you're going to tell a story about somebody, don't rip them off, I guess it is, to some extent.
Which, of course, historically, there were lots of stories of that. And he has, Jonathan, I remember, showed somewhat in one of his talks, there is this very famous photograph, I'm going to have to describe it now, of a bunch of people with their mobile phones pointing in a direction, and it won various prizes and so on. And Jonathan always, you know, he shows this photograph. I'm going to be telling the story badly because I don't remember who the people were. But the point, you know, the point that he always makes is who actually made the money out of, you know, these poor people stretching out trying to get a mobile phone signal. It wasn't them, but it should have been them. Is his point.
So does he think that photographers have a sort of duty to share their...
Well, I think this is partly of the kind of gravity of it. You know, how do you share the story? Who benefits? You sort of need to be asking these questions. You know, where do you tell the story? And he is, for example, he does do stuff for charity and things where, you know, he's doing stuff for, you know, people who are unwell and so on to try and generate income and so on for them. I think he does have a sense of, even, you know, you wouldn't necessarily... always be saying you share everything, but that you at least are thoughtful about the consequences of what you do and who you're benefiting from.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, ultimately.
So just in that wee bit, you just described the photograph to us that we can't see.
Yes.
Which kind of leads quite nicely onto
the other thing.
Did you see how I did that, folks? Yeah.
I think that was very good.
Yeah.
That was a good segue.
Yeah. So he says, we also did pictures for your ears, the pilot. Can we transmit photographs and radio? What might it mean to use a radio to create pictures from your ears? Where's that from? Is that...
That was the idea that we had. We just made... I interviewed a few of the phoner people, Jonathan included, and we had the idea that it never did happen. We had the idea that we would create a DS106 radio show that would be called Pictures for Your Ears, where that's what we would be doing. Would be the whole point of the thing would be that different people would be telling stories where they would be creating auditory pictures. And so what might it mean to use the radio to do that?
Yeah.
And his idea was originally that he would get his students to do it, so they join in, like I'm joining, you know, like we could use Skype, etc., and they would join in and tell, you know, and tell store and tell photographs, you know, and create pictures for your years. So we just did a little pilot of that, and it was, you know, in that context that the two things that we are about to talk about, the unforgettable and the unphotographable. Ideas came from, because they're both ways of creating imagery in people's minds via sound.
So, I mean, it's quite a challenge because sound is temporal, if you know what I mean. You know, it goes on for a while. and you normally think of sound as telling a story which progresses, and a photograph maybe is a snapshot of that. So it's sort of bending audio in an interesting way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going on. It's not. You're not going to find out what happens next in this exercise. Yeah. It's just, you're just left with these people all holding their photo, their cameras up, looking at you.
Yes, as opposed to if you were telling a story in the kind of format, there would be a kind of beginning, middle, and end, and it would be a sort of sequence and so on. Whereas this is something more that where you're just doing your best to use words in order to build an image in people's mind. This was the interest, of course, from Jonathan's perspective, because he's trying to get his students to develop their ability to notice, which if you are going to be using words in order to describe an image, there is, you know, there is what you choose to say, there is what you choose to leave unsaid, there is the way that you choose to set up, as we are doing right now, the way you choose to set up what you're about, the picture that you're about to tell, as it were, and all of these things, I suppose, are interesting from the perspective of teaching narrative, which I guess you could do in any medium.
Yeah, so unforgettable.
Yeah, unforgettable. That is one of my favorite books. And when Jonathan told me about it, I had trouble getting my head around it. So maybe our million listeners might need a little time. So it's called Unforgettable, and the tagline is "Images that changed our lives." And it was written, if one can say that, by Peter Davenport. And at the back of the book, it says, "There are some photographs that you never forget. Artwork and images that have captured the imagination and left a powerful imprint in your mind's eye." This fun and mesmerizing book collects hundreds of the most spectacular images from the last 100 years without actually reproducing them. So that's the key to the book. And the book, when you open the book is a blank book, except for two lines at the bottom that describe what might be a famous image. And the point, of course, is that as soon as you hear the title or you hear the thing described, you immediately remember, imagine in your mind's eye, you create that image, even if you can't actually see it in the book and you're not actually, you know, seeing it anywhere. It's in your mind's eye, as it were. So one says the inkblot test, developed by Rorschach. So immediately you would remember those funny psychology tests that look like butterflies or bats or whatever. Black and white.
So that one
is one that's memorable for me, maybe not.
Yeah. let's not go there.
Let me pick the, yeah, I'm just running through.
But the idea is, I guess, that the picture, these don't describe the pictures at all.
No, they don't. It's just the title, that's all.
They just give you enough information that your memory does the rest, yeah.
So it says, "Shooting the Audience, A Great Train Robbery, directed by Edwin S. Porter." So we had that one quite recently, Western 106. I'm just going to another page. "Babe Ruth bows out, Nat Fain, 1848. This might be something to the American.
Yeah, I've got a big picture of somebody with stripy trousers on, carrying a stick.
Barbie doll. created by Ruth Handler, 1959. And so on. And so each thing, so there is JF Kennedy assassinated. Mm. And immediately, in my mind, immediately I can see the car, I can see everything, I can see a film actually more than I can an image or a photo, and so on. But the point about it is that, well, for me, I guess, the human mind's ability to conjure up things on the basis of the words that we hear.
Mm.
That even, and that there are certain things that are so much, so iconic in our collective mind, if one could say that, that just naming it will give you a whole bunch of information.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting because it helps people understand the power of words, I guess.
Yeah. And can you tell me, do you want to go over the title again and the author?
Yeah. It's called Unforgettable,
yeah.
And it's Peter Davenport. It's a tiny little red book.
And all right. I'd pictured it as a big book, like an art book, but just with blank pages. No, okay.
And it's a tiny little red book. So Charles Manson, yeah. The Life magazine cover,
yeah.
1968. And in the end, we remember these things, even though they certainly weren't part of my life.
Yeah.
So I'd say it's interesting, and that maybe then it follows from the idea with the Unphotographable, and that is a website that we can put in the show notes, and it's unphotographable.com.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, the idea is, I think, what a wonderful thing, the human mind. Somebody thought, can I just rant on about this for a bit?
Yeah, go for it.
So somebody thought about how many times do you have or are in situations where you would love to take a photo of something, but for any number of reasons, you just couldn't. And so the whole website is, this is a picture I did not take. And effectively what it does is it tell the story. This is the picture I did not take. And I can use a personal example before I ask you to read a couple of examples with your lovely voice. Because I went with my camera today, which I never remember to bring with me, to walk my dog. And my dog loves to do this... rolling on the grass thing when they're happy. They kind of go on their back and they roll on the grass and they look like little bugs. And it's one of the things that makes me happiest in the world to see. To watch him in a sunny day doing his little spring roll, as I call it, because it's he only ever does them when it's warm and it's springtime.
Mm.
And I was determined I was going to get a photograph of this dog doing his little spring roll, and I swear to God, he did a zillion of them, and I could not get a photo, a video, or anything. So this is a picture I did not take, have not managed to take, but I could just tell a story about it.
going to look for the dog rolling his back and not finding him.
I think that they are in the case of Foner and Jonathan's idea, it was, for example, very difficult situations. For example, when somebody finds themselves in a situation that is very difficult, the photographer could still bring something back. They still have something about the experience, but they may not have been able to pull out their camera and take that picture.
Yeah,
that was the idea behind it.
Yeah. So this Photographable seems to be all by the same person.
I think so.
Yeah.
So although I think he was using it as a task for his students, but yes, I think.
So he says it's a catalogue of exceptional mistakes, photos never taken that weren't meant to be forgotten, opportunities missed, simple failures, occasions when I wished I'd taken the picture or not, forgotten the camera, or had been brave enough to click the shutter. So that's how he introduces it, and that's quite you sent a couple of examples.
I look for you for short ones because there are some that are long.
And some of them are just a sentence. And this is a picture I did not take of a black lab playing fetch with an Asian pear. Now, I'm not sure if an Asian pear, I can't say pear is one of the words I think Doug would say. I've got a slight Belfast pear, I think. Is an Asian pear spiny?
No, I think they are the sort of flatter. They are funny. They are more like more round and flatter than the normal pear thing. So it's. Do you not then imagine immediately a dog playing with something?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I was wondering if it was because it was shaking its head to get rid of this thing, but no, it's not.
I don't know. It may be. I don't know for sure. I imagined it as I've seen these pears that are like ugly. They're like all funny shaped. They're not. Mm. And I thought that was an Asian pear, but I may be wrong.
Well, folks, if you're interested, you can Google it. This is a tweet I did not tweet, says Ronald. We're glad you are the listener that isn't listening. Or something. And this is another one. This is a picture I did not take of a boy in a blue t-shirt and jeans standing on the sidewalk pointing at a miniature black poodle on a leash while the boy's father tries to hustle him into the family station wagon. But the boy just stood there pointing at the poodle saying, "Daddy, I can tell it's a boy dog." Well, his dad shook his head and said, "Just get in the car, son."
Oh, you see, you should read another one. Go and click and read another one. We like you reading things.
But that's a real Americana one, isn't it? You've got the station wagon beside the... Yeah, I'm imagining that's in the 50s or something almost. You know, it's a sort of a classic Americana sidewalk shot. And, yeah, the poodle's on the leash, but the boy's kind of... Maybe slightly in the leash as well or something, I think.
They really are lovely.
Yeah.
They really are very lovely stories.
There's just... And there's a ton of them.
Oh, yes, there are.
It's a wee bit scary. You're just wondering if you click these, you're going to get something unsuitable to read out. But this is a picture I did not take of a gentleman standing in the magazine section of a drugstore late at night, peering through his bifocals at the small print biographies towards the back of a special 100 Best Pictures issue of National Geographic, his finger scanning down the page, his mouth quietly whispering the name McCurry. Was it McCurry?
No.
Looking for his own picture? I don't know. Yeah.
They're lovely, aren't they? Oh, you're brilliant. Oh, but you should do a whole show just reading them. A good show.
Yeah, the titles are great too. I'm just looking at there's an archive page which has got a list of the titles, and some of those are Played Umbrella Hamster Cage Freeway. That's quite a long one. This is the last one here. Okay. This is a picture I did not take of a man running in front of mid-morning freeway traffic, his right hand clutching a closed plaid umbrella, his left hand gripping the handle of a hamster cage, complete with spinning wheel and water bottle, in which the hamster is attempting to scale one of the cage's walls, and in doing so throws the cage off balance, which tilts the cage into the man's grip, forcing him to adjust as he dodges the traffic, his plaid umbrella iron higher to compensate for the shifting hamster, who's getting close to the cage ceiling and closer to the man's left hand, gripping the handle of the hamster cage amid honking traffic and a mid-morning freeway off-ramp. No full stops in any of this.
So
it's one picture, you know.
That's what creates that sense.
Yeah.
Immediately you get, hearing you, you get a kind of a photograph that isn't just a still photograph, but, you know, everything just builds and it has sound. Because as soon as you mention the traffic, you know, things happen in one's mind, which I guess is the point of it.
Yeah.
And how it requires, you know, that kind of gift, I think, of any good storyteller, you know, and that's something that I'm not so good with, is the detail, the attention to detail that you just would name, you know, specific detail that makes something come alive.
Yeah, why a plaid umbrella?
Yes.
It's good it's closed, but why play it? It just brings it more to life, you know.
And then the balancing thing, you know, yeah. You go, oh, yes, I can see it. it's a wonderful. It was the phoner outing from DS106 was actually lovely. I did learn a lot.
Yeah, I saw Jonathan Worth talk at a conference a while back, and he was just great. You know, the whole thing is quite amazing. Very much in favour of doing stuff in the open. In a very powerful way, and he argued very strongly that by having his university course open to people that weren't paying to get to the university, actually did the university a lot of good. Mm-hmm. The course, I think, you know, grew in the number of people that wanted to do it. Obviously, good publicity as well as helping lots of people who probably couldn't afford to go there. So, very impressive.
And he ended up, I've met, you know, Jonathan a few times, and I always remember him saying, you know, at the beginning they had trouble getting people, and then, you know, even so, the university was still a bit, you know, what the hell are you going to be offering this for free, mm-hmm. you know, and it once, you know, they allowed it, after a while they realized that actually it made economic sense. It wasn't just a charity thing, that actually it made economic sense to do it, which is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the best point, I think, and one of the really interesting points about doing things in the open is that it can create wealth or something like that, I suppose. Jonathan as well has talked very often about his approach to photography and not getting too uptight about copies on the web and things, mm-hmm. because it's done him a lot of good to get, I guess, again, publicity and people then wanting to buy the real thing. I think that's a common DS106 theme, is in general open stuff is useful. So
there we are.
We had
2 million listeners today. Alan and Ron. Hello both.
Quite a quiet one. But I think we've covered that quite nicely, to tell you the truth.
And we had Jap as well, because I saw earlier that he did a little tweet.
And we could probably look at the stats, but I never
could
do.
Look at the stats to see how many million they're open.
Yeah, I never do. Yeah, because the stats aren't the point. Anyway, we kind of wrap this up now then.
I guess so. Shall we have some sound, some music, some something?
We'll have a bumper in the way, because of course I forgot to bumper in.
And we didn't say DS106 Radio for Life. Oh my God. Thank God David is not listening tonight.
Yeah, I think I get it in the introduction. Here's it. Well, I'm trying to find the right bumper, but I'll just play this one. I'm not sure what. I think this is probably the one I like.
Good spell.
I like all the others too.
We're John and Mary on a good spell. They're tough and honor, and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go and give them a tweet. The DS106 Good Spell Show.
Yeah. And there's Kathy listening quietly. Hi, Kathy. I think this has been quite a quiet show, but it feels quite nice. kind of calm and restful wee episode. So we'll hang up now, and we will of course say DS106 Radio for Life.